أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، لا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم، والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين وخاتم النبيين وسيد المرسلين أبي القاسم محمد وعلى آل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المظلومين، ولعن الله الدائم على أعدائهم أجمعين من ليلتنا هذه إلى قيام يوم الدين. السلام على الحسين وعلى علي بن الحسين وعلى أولاد الحسين وعلى أصحاب الحسين. Respected elders and brothers and sisters in Islam and Iman, we've gathered here for a majlis for Abu Abdullah al-Hussein alayhi salam. If I can ask you to, inshallah, attract the special attention of the Imam of our time by reciting a united, beautiful salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. As an inspiration for the topic for tonight, I would like to first share with you a story which comes to us from the journey that Abu Abdullah al-Hussein alayhi salam and the caravan are taking from Makkah towards Kufa. Along the way, they come to a certain resting stop where Imam Hussein alayhi salam is informed that the tent that is pitched there belongs to a man named Abdullah ibn Hur al-Ju'afi. He was somebody who was known to be a warrior. Imam Hussein alayhi salam sends one of his representatives to invite him to join them, to explain to them the mission. But Abdullah refuses to join. And when Imam Hussein alayhi salam hears about his refusal, he himself, along with some of his family members, together they go personally, he goes to invite Abdullah to join him. And the story that takes place is a well-known one. It's one that we can derive a great many number of lessons from. When Imam Hussein alayhi salam speaks with him, explains to him what he's doing, Abdullah refuses. He makes excuses. He says that I can give you my horse, I can give you my sword, but I can't join you. And the Imam alayhi salam is disappointed with him. He says, we have no need of your horse or your sword. It is you, you know, to paraphrase, it is you that we wanted. Now, it's very interesting that Abdullah ibn Hur al-Ju'afi, this incident, of course, was something that was life-changing for him. It became the source of regret for him for the rest of his life. And in history, we're told that after he heard about the martyrdom of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, he was filled with intense regret of abandoning him and refusing his invitation. But there's one comment that has been recorded in history from Abdullah. In that time, you know, which was a very severe test for him, where definitely his mind must have been occupied with how is he going to say no, there was something that caught his attention, which was so important that it made its way into the history books, and even until now we remember it each time we go to the history of Karbala. And that point has to do with the way that Imam Hussein alayhi salam was with his family. Abdullah says that when my eyes fell upon Imam Hussein alayhi salam, I had never seen such a beautiful sight in my entire life. And the thing that caused my heart to break was when I saw Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his children and the youth around him and how they were interacting with each other. This was something that I had never seen before, and it caused my heart to break. And this is an inspiration for the topic for tonight. I want to, inshallah, speak about family in Islam. And I want to look at what are some of the major problems that we're facing in today's society when it comes to our families. A few of them, inshallah, try to talk about some of the Islamic solutions regarding them. And the reason why I've chosen this topic is because, and the reason why I chose to cover it at the end is because of its dire importance. It's something which is very much needed, and it applies to everyone because nobody is not without a family. The family in Islam, just to give you an indication about how important it is, I want to quote a tradition from Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi. مَا مِن شَيْءٍ أَحَبُّ إِلَى اللَّهِ عَزَّ وَجَلْ مِن بَيْتٍ يُعْمَرُ فِي الْإِسْلَامِ بِالنِّكَاحِ. That thing which is the most beloved to Allah, among everything else, okay, more than if there's somebody who is worshipping on his own, more than if you go for Hajj or for Ziyarah or you make a lot of charity or you build a mosque, whatever it is when you have a home which is founded upon Islam, and that home is governed by marriage. And within it, it is made full of life, and it is something which, you know, is given life by way of this marriage. And then he goes on to say that that which is most detested by Allah is that home which is destroyed on account of separation and divorce. And we know from traditions, it's quite well known that divorce is something which is halal, but it's something which Allah Ta'ala has stated through the traditions of the Ahlul Bayt, that it is something which is not liked, it is something which is disliked. Now, when we see that something is the most beloved, okay, then it's something that we want to strive for. It's something that has great importance. From the Islamic perspective of value, it has great value. But when we look at our society today, and when we look at our communities, and even among the mu'mineen, the trend is to downplay the importance of family. Or in some cases, to change the nature of what family is about. And so what we need to do is not only understand what the importance of family is in Islam, but we need to understand what a family is itself, because it's being redefined for us. And this goes back to the topic of the series, which has to do with the idol of the self. The self likes to be the one that is on center stage, taking the spotlight, making a show and getting all the attention and having everyone directed at their attention at them. The self wants to be a being that looks out for its own interests, is focused on gaining profit for itself and deflecting any type of harm. It doesn't have time to be able to deal with others. It's too busy forming its own image and worrying about what other people care about it. And that type of self-centered, individualistic attitude goes directly against what the idea of marriage and family is all about. Family is almost like, you could say, the complete opposite, where it's about going away from this type of self-centered perspective and trying to see things as a group. And a group is something that we've been talking about, how from the Islamic perspective, Allah Ta'ala has given us a task, a mission, not only to be able to attain perfection and take a journey, an individual journey to Him, but as a community, as a society, to journey to Him as well. When Ayatollah Khamenei explains the role of a family, he uses a very apt example. He says that, imagine that you have a body, the body being the likeness of the society. What is the most basic building block on a physical level of the human body? It's a cell. Now, our body is made up of millions of cells. They do all sorts of wonderful and fascinating things. But what is the importance of one cell with respect to the rest of the cells? And the cells are being likened to the family within the society. The way it works is that even if you have one cell that starts acting like it's sick, it goes off, the wiring gets kind of messed up, right? It, for example, na'udhu billah, it becomes cancerous, for example. It can be the source of corrupting other cells, which go corrupt other cells, and then the whole body can be taken over by these type of cells, which are sometimes you can even attack the body itself. So the importance of a family is something which is extremely important. It can lead to the health of the society, and it can lead to the sickness of the society. Allah Ta'ala in the Quran, in Surah Ali Imran, verse number 200, he says at the very end of the surah, he says, يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا اصبروا وصابروا ورابطوا ورابطوا واتقوا الله لعلكم تفلحون. There are four commands given there. And the Mufassirin say that in a way, this verse can be used to understand what is our common duty. Like, what is it that we're supposed to, what is our responsibility at a high level? So number one is اصبروا. Okay, have self-restraint. Have patience. Because as a mu'min, you're going to be tried. You're going to go through difficult times in your life. Don't think it's going to be a walk in the park. Having iman is basically inviting some type of difficulty in your life because you are now telling Allah that you wish to be challenged and you can rise to a higher level. So that's going to happen for you. But is that all? Is it just a matter of waiting for those tests to come up in our individual life and for us to climb up the stairs and eventually get to the state of ultimate self-perfection? There's more to it. That's part of it. There's another part. What is it? Wasabiru. Sabiru, according to some of the interpretations, means that as groups of individuals come together and help each other navigate those difficulties. You're supposed to be a community that is intimately aware of what's going on with each other. And when one person has a problem, the other people are there to support them. Now, how does this take place? It takes place, for example, in the form of friendships, in the form of centers, but primarily in the form of families. وَرَابِطُ وَرَابِطُ meaning that be closely tied to one another. And the ahadith and the mufassirin explain that this, of course, requires a center point, an axis, a pole that everyone is aligned with. And that is the concept of the leader, the imam, or the representative of the imam, who is going to be the one that everyone is linked to in the center point, but also everyone is linked to each other with the bonds of wilaya, as we've explained in the past. Wilaya meaning a very close connection without any barriers, heart to heart. Now, and then Allah says, وَاتَّقُوا اللَّهِ have taqwa of Allah. And what is the result of that? لَعَلَّكُمْ تُفْلِحُونَ so that you may attain success. So in a way, there's a very beautiful ayah which summarizes, well, what are we supposed to do? What is our practical duty? So you see here that the idea is that you can't be somebody who is sort of just worrying about yourself. You have to be looking at your responsibility as being in a group together. But the idea, the self-centeredness, the idol of the self is one that doesn't like that. It doesn't like the idea of wanting to be with others and work as a group and the difficulties that have to be endured as a result. I was reviewing in our country, in the province of Ontario, recently, like in the last few years, they introduced a new curriculum for teaching family life and, you know, the issues related to that. And it's very interesting that this curriculum, you know, introduces all sorts of ideas about the modern conception of the family. But when we look at it from an Islamic perspective, let's say that you were asked to come up with like a few words that define the core of a family. Like if you wanted to, like, let's say, you know, draw a picture where you had a family, and then you said that, okay, what are the roots of that family? I think if we were to come together and say from an Islamic perspective, what makes up a family, we would probably come up with things like, let's say, love, compassion, marriage, right? These are the types of things that we would think would be part of a family. It's very interesting that in this entire curriculum, across all age levels, where it talks about all sorts of things and many things which are very inappropriate to be taught at that age, which they're suggesting that they should be taught, not once will you find a single mention of the word love or the word marriage. Now, that's something which is very serious, because the education is not, the educational curriculum that is taught at the public level is not something which is independent of the way that the society is moving and the way the government would like it to move. It means that their whole idea of a family is being changed and thwarted. Not only do we have this problem with the individual wanting to be the sole actor on the stage, we have another problem where the entire definition of the family is being changed into something which is more of like a functional unit. Okay, forget about the love. Forget about things like sacrifice and compassion and mercy and growing together and helping one another and raising children. And no, forget about those things. Let's talk about what's in it for you. On a utilitarian, pragmatic basis, what is it that you can get out of it? If it's something where, you know, doing that whole wedding thing is going to be tough for you, okay, don't worry about it. You know, just go ahead. You can be a family too. You know what? The family can be up to you to decide, because after all, it's all about you, isn't it? That's sort of the attitude, that because the idol of the self is the thing which is worship, you get to decide how you want to form your family. One of the things that every believer and every person of faith should be concerned about is the redefinition of what is the core components of a family. The teachings of faith, the holy books teach us that a family consists of a husband and a wife who are lawfully wedded for the sake of God. The vows and the covenants that are made are a holy bond. And there are commitments that are to be made when that takes place. But modern society proposes different models of families. And they're preaching these and pushing them to our children as well. It's very interesting if you look and see the promotion of alternate families to children. I was looking at how is it that, you know, mainstream media is pushing these ideas to our children. If you are not aware, you should know that the year of 2017 was the tipping point. It's where it switched from being something that was kind of talked about maybe in, you know, not so openly. It was kind of theorized. It was being practiced. The stage was being set. But in 2017, it was something that came to the forefront. And then it was pushed to the children as well. In March of 2017, for the very first time, just to give you one example, it's important for us to realize that these things come about as a planned agenda. March of 2017, for the very first time, in one of the Disney cartoons, they had the some of the acts being shown between the same gender openly. It was a very brief segment. If you weren't watching carefully, you would even just miss it altogether. You just think, oh, this is a normal cartoon. But when you go back and you pause, you're like, whoa, there's a dance that's taking place. And then there's, you know, for example, two men and they're doing these things. Later on, in July or August, I think July of 2017, there was a show that was released on the Disney Channel, very first time, where the main family that's in that show is a family that consists of two mothers. And it's very interesting, brothers and sisters, that this show was geared towards children of, like, let's say 4 or 5 years old. And I remember last summer when I saw the clip regarding it, and the one who was making the show was talking about that this is our family and we're very proud of how it's being shown, tears came to my eyes. Because for me, it was something that was so disturbing, that what was being proposed is a model which is so different than the model that has been taught to us by the prophets and by their successors. The family that we know about is the pure family. The family of Ali and Fatima, the family of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa and Khadija. And we cannot just simply look at these things and say that, okay, we'll have, you know, that's what they want. Okay, that's the way it is. We're in the society. We have to just let it be and then that's it. These things have severe impact on children. For them to see the fundamental paradigms, the basic building blocks of a society where the very identity of it is being questioned is something which definitely has an impact on our children. And we need to be aware of these and talk to them about it and protect them from, or at least they should understand, what is it that Islam says about these things. Now, brothers and sisters, what has resulted from this is that we have a moving away from the family among the mu'mineen. This is a serious problem. We have, for example, people getting married and then finding that marriage is something which is too difficult for them. It's too inconvenient, and they're moving away from those marriages. We have people who are still in the marriages because, for example, they want to save face in the community or they don't want to disturb what's happening with their kids, but they suffer, and they wish they could do something to just get out of it. We have people who, in the public, they seem to be the best of mu'mineen. They have the marks on their face from their sajda. They have, you know, the tasbih. They have the going to the programs, but at home it's like a war zone. We have youth who are suffering. They have natural tendencies and natural inclinations, and they don't know what to do because they can't find somebody suitable to get married. We have disparity between genders where, for example, typically you have many females who are very well educated and, you know, and then they can't find, for example, males who are at the right age, who would be similarly be able to meet their intellectual needs. And the problem goes on, where once the marriage takes place and the wedding takes place and then they start living together, they live life like they saw in the shows. It's like a relationship of like, as long as it's good for me, I'm there, but don't ask me to do anything or sacrifice because, hey, if I don't want to be here, then I can get out of this and I have my benefits waiting for me. I can sue you. I can get your house. I can get half your property. So just, you know, keep away. Don't push me to do anything I don't want to do. And these type of things are very serious, brothers and sisters. We have to address them. I mentioned that one of the connections that we have with the family is towards that goal of the journey of the society towards perfection, which we know is the society of the imam of our time. Did you know, brothers and sisters, that for a mu'min, the family is almost like a test to see how we can develop love and dedication to the imam? In one riwayah, it's a very beautiful riwayah. Mufaddal asks Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, it's reported in Ilal al-Shara'i, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. Mufaddal goes to Imam Sadiq, he says that, I have a question for you. You know, when babies, sometimes without being, you know, entertained, they start laughing. They start smiling, they start laughing. And sometimes, like, there's nothing going on and they start crying. Why does this take place? And it's very interesting, you know, that there are some companions who never asked the imam these types of questions, but there are some companions who realize that the imams are gateways of knowledge. They know everything. We can go to them even on these things as well, too, matters of tarbiyah. Now, if you ask that same question to somebody who even might have a PhD in child psychology, they would give you a different sort of answer. But what he says is that for the children of mu'mineen, or actually he says it in general way, he says that that child, that baby, when he smiles, it's because he is seeing the imam of his time. Because the imam is not hidden from the baby. And that sight of the imam is a source of so much pleasure to that child that he or she cannot help but to smile. And the reason why he or she cries is when the imam alayhi salam disappears from sight, because it was such a comforting and beautiful scene to see that this is something which is upsetting him. And when that baby develops and grows into a child and develops the ability to speak, that door is now closed for him. He can no longer see the imam. Now, brothers and sisters, we have to ask ourselves that if this is the case, right? Like, why would it be the case that it's just for a baby? Doesn't it mean that the whole purpose of the family and the whole purpose of why we're given children is so that that connection to the imam alayhi salam can now be developed, but be developed in a conscious sort of way, where through a tarbiyah and through knowledge and through purity and through being assisted by the family environment, that this child grows to be able to know the imam alayhi salam, but out of their own accord, because of their own perfection. So you see, brothers and sisters, there's a deep connection between the family and between what the whole purpose of our being here is when it comes to our social responsibilities. So what is it, what is some of the root problems that we have? I want to, inshallah, cover some of these in some of the remaining time. If, inshallah, you can help me with the salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Brothers and sisters, if you spend some time pondering upon the nature of creation and our role in this world, one of the conclusions that you will come to is that most definitely we were not created for this world. Okay, how do we know that? It's very simple. Okay, it's very simple. It doesn't require, you know, studying hours and hours of theology. Very simple. When you look around you, you see that everything has been created in an extremely just and proportionate way. Everything has a system. Everything has properly, you know, it fits together in the way it ought to fit together. And when you look at nature, you look at the way that, you know, the creation works, the way that human beings live and die, and animals and trees and plants and the planets and everything, there's so much wonder there. You see that everything operates on the basis of justice. Okay, Allah says in the Quran, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم, Surah Al-Rahman, وَالسَّمَاءَ رَفَعَهَا وَوَضَعَ الْمِيزَانَ. Allah Ta'ala has raised the skies and He has placed the balance. And some of the Mufassirin say that this balance is something which encompasses all of His creation and something that can be sensed if we just ponder upon it. Now, if you understand and accept that everything has been created with a purpose, and you look at the human being, you say that, okay, we are born, and then it takes us a long time to just figure out, you know, how to survive by ourselves. We need a lot of help until we get to that point, before we can start eating by ourselves and, you know, walking and then, you know, managing our lives. It takes a while. And even then, by the time we actually learn about how to navigate this world and what's important and what's not important, it takes a long time. You know, maybe even until, like, let's say 30 or 40 years old, that's when you really start to have, like, wisdom develop and understanding. Typically, okay, for somebody who doesn't have, let's say, just the average person. Now, could it make sense that at that time when we're starting to really realize what everything is about, what's really worth attaching our heart to and what's not, that suddenly now we start losing some of the strength that we had, we start being, you know, feeling the age, and we start basically realizing on a typical, you know, the typical progression of human being, that we're getting closer to leaving. You know, imagine that it was just about this world. Wouldn't that be an extremely cruel type of experiment? Let me put you here, and right when you're about to figure out what everything's about, I'm going to take you away, and then that's it. It's over with. Right? Nobody can accept that. Anybody who thinks about it realizes that we are not being facing old age and losing our strength and, you know, losing our hair and whatnot because it's a cruel sort of experiment and then that's over. But rather, we're being told that get ready for leaving because there's something else waiting for you. And this is what Allah, this is what the Imam alayhi salam have told us in one of the hadith from Nahjul Balagha. Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam says, فَإِنَّ الدُّنْيَا لَمْ تُخْلَقْ لَكُمْ Dara muqamin. The world has not been created for you as a place for you to stick around. Bal khuliqat lakum majazan. It's been created for you as a bridge, as a passage point. What are you supposed to do here? Litazawwadu minha al-a'mal so that you can acquire the provisions for that journey, إِلَىٰ دَارِ الْقَرَارِ, until you get to that place where you're supposed to stick around. It's not here, it's the hereafter. And you know how it is, brothers and sisters, like when we have a trip coming up, you know, and let's say we're going to a new place, we're going to spend some time there. What do? We start checking out like TripAdvisor, I don't know, Airbnb and whatnot. We start looking at it. We start researching, figuring out, you know, where to stay, what we're going to do, what we're going to take with us, how we're going to do the currency, you know, all those things, right? We plan. We prepare. So if we know that this world is not about, it's not just about this, right? Then what we're looking for is those things which are really going to set us up for success in the hereafter. One of the main problems that prevent us from having proper families and having the right attitude towards families is we have weak belief in the hereafter. We don't, for example, when we're told that for a man to help out at home, even for an hour, the hadith of the Prophet says that if a man were to help out at home for an hour, the reward that he gets for doing so is better than 1,000 years of worship, 1,000 hajj and umrah, 1,000 freed slaves, 1,000 I don't know what and what, all these types of things, right? When we read those things, we're like, oh, okay, yeah, that's good. We heard that in Majlis. Now let's go on. What's on my phone? What's the latest? Right? What's the problem? Is that we don't, like, if we don't have a sense for ma'ad, that we don't have a sense for hereafter, a care for it, then these type of things don't take importance in our lives. We have to realize, brothers and sisters, that this world and everything in it, it's something which cannot meet the very basic needs that we've been created with. It doesn't give us that happiness. I was reading about the founder of Minecraft. Okay, Minecraft is a video game, extremely popular. Okay, it was sold to Microsoft a few years ago for $2.5 billion. It's a lot of money. And to the guy himself who founded it, he got that money. Okay, now, it's very interesting, right? Most people would think that if you got that much money, you are set, right? Everything that your heart desires, it's going to come to you. So what does he do? A few years ago, he buys the most expensive home in the most expensive neighborhood in California. This place was so set up, it even had a special room for candy, right? And it wasn't just a normal room. I mean, we're talking about, like, you know, a huge, I don't know if you call it a room or, I don't know, a hall, right? Where you had, like, you know, from the ceiling to the floor candy, let alone the other stuff in the house. Okay, but what we saw was that, you know, soon afterwards, right, he was sending tweets talking about how lonely he felt, how unhappy he was. This was a couple of years ago, and recently I decided to kind of check up and see, okay, what's happening with him, right? You know, maybe he had some issues or something like that, right? Somebody interviewed him recently, and they said that, you know, this guy, like, all he does, he's obsessed about checking his Twitter feed, right? He wants to see, what is it that everyone else is saying about him? You see, like, this type of worship of the self-idol, it doesn't take you anywhere. It doesn't give you happiness. I was reading about another guy who's, like, you know, successful, the main sort of fashion guru for the entire fashion industry. And he's talking about how he has all these clients and all these things like that. And then says that, you know, I don't have time for a significant other. I don't have time for children. And I don't have time even for pets. Right? What is this then? What are you waiting for? Right? When in this world are you going to have that? So the point is that if we don't have this belief in the hereafter, then things like marriage, it's be like, yeah, you know what? I'm here in this world. I have to enjoy my time here. And it doesn't take on importance. Now, number two, the second reason why I want to mention tonight, why is it that we sometimes don't have the right attitude towards marriage and family is this attitude that, okay, I am going to be a good Muslim and I'm going to remain single, but I'll still do the right things. I'll still, like, do my wajibat, I'll stay away from the haram, I'll participate, I'll volunteer. But I enjoy life as a single person. I enjoy having my own schedule. I enjoy being able to go to the coffee shop and drink coffee on my own and not having anybody tell me what to do and having anybody. I love that independence. Brothers and sisters, again here, we have to ask ourselves that, is this what is going to give you success in the hereafter? It's easy sometimes to do something when you don't have the challenge. But what really gives us merit in the eyes of Allah is when we have that challenge and we're able to successfully overcome it. It's a very important point. We have a hadith from Imam Ar-Ridha alayhi salam. He says that don't be fooled by somebody who always seems to be like humble and staying away from haram and doing the right thing. Because it could be the case that the reason why on the outer he's staying away from haram is because he doesn't have the means to be even be exposed to it. If he were exposed to it, then you see how it is that he would react to that. So somebody who's single, and let's say that, you know, they can do their prayers on time all the time. They're always there volunteering. You know, they're the ones who, let's say, you know, they're the ones to, you know, always be sitting at the front, you know, in the majlis, right? Because they don't have any dependents, right? So it's like, okay, I can, right? Well, okay, that's great. Inshallah, there's thawab for that. But let's see if you can do those things when you have a family to worry about as well too. Let's see if you keep that smile on your face when you were up at night because your child was crying. Let's see if you can keep up that same spirit of charity towards others, even when you're at home and nobody is there to watch you except for your family who you're very familiar with. That's when you can say that truly you have value. There was a lady who once comes to our fifth Imam alayhi salam, and she says to him that I am a mutabattila. And he asked her, well, what do you mean by that? Because, you know, tabattul can mean something which is good. It's somebody who cuts off from other than Allah. Meaning that, let's say, they're dedicating themselves to God. Which, you know, is a way of tawheed, meaning of tawheed, synonym to tawheed. So she says that, well, I have decided that I'm not going to get married. I'm going to be somebody who remains single. I'll be pure, stay away from sin. I'm not going to get married. So the Imam alayhi salam tells her that there is no good in doing so and having that type of attitude. I'm paraphrasing here. Because if that was something that had merit in it, then definitely my grandmother Fatima al-Zahra alayhi salam would have done that. She would have declined to get married, but there is no one to surpass Fatima alayhi salam in excellence. So if we really call ourselves Shia, then we should at least have that desire to want to go towards family life. Now, it may be the case that the circumstances don't allow us to do so. We're trying, we're putting things in place, but right now is not the time. Or let's say it is the time, but you know, Allah Ta'ala hasn't opened up that way for me yet. But that desire should be there, the effort should be made, my responsibility should be fulfilled in this regard. Now, the other thing I want to mention is, brothers and sisters, you know, there's an attitude here, again, related to this idol of the self, which is that it becomes very hard for us when we're so self-obsessed with our image, what people say about us, taking care of our, you know, whims and desires, that it's very hard for us to think about the responsibility of caring for somebody else. In our society, typically the extent to what people want to take care of somebody else is like a pet. Or they're like, okay, you know what? I feel kind of guilty being so selfish, right? I have something in me. I can take care of something else, somebody else, right? So, okay, I'll get a pet. I'll take care of a dog, right? But the reality is that oftentimes somebody might get a pet dog because it's really not for the dog. It's for themselves, right? The poor dog, right, has to suffer so much at the, you know, dealing with like its master. Right? This type of attitude needs to change. Like, if we just think about it, okay, and we ask ourselves that, what is the most valuable gift that we can give? Right? What is the most, you know, there's only so much pleasure that you derive from utilizing the blessings of God. It only takes you to a certain point. But what really gives pleasure is when you can give the gifts of God to someone else. And that's why, you know, some people, in our society, they realize this. They're like, oh, you know what? I got to do some charity work. So what do? They say, okay, every other weekend I'll sign up and we'll go to a soup kitchen. Okay, and then the other week I'll do this. Another week I'll organize this thing. Okay, but the rest of the week I'll be with myself. Brothers and sisters, If you want to take that spirit of charity and you say that I really care about helping somebody else, then you'd be like, you know what? I want to do this on a full-time basis. I want to do it in the daytime. I want to do it at the nighttime. I want to do it in the good times. I want to do it in the bad times. And I want to do it in the form of these children who will be the source of, you know, they'll be my projects. I'll be the one who, with the help of God, I'll be a conduit for them to be raised with tawheed and with the acceptance of the wilaya of the imam. Now, what more beautiful thing can you have from that? The way the society has made child rearing and family life is like as if it's something which is a big burden and there's no goodness from it. It's just a big sacrifice. For sure it's a sacrifice. But we've been created in a way that we enjoy sacrificing. Imagine somebody who looks back at their life and they say, the best I could do, and I'm not talking about people who tried and it didn't happen for them. No. Let's say that they deliberately made these choices. Say, you know what? The best I allowed myself to do because I was so indulged in myself was that I had a pet. Okay. I mean, couldn't you have done more? Right? Didn't you yourself enjoy a family and all the things that you took from your family? Don't you want to give that and do better for someone else in your life? Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. So we mentioned a couple of core reasons why it is that people are staying away from family life or being scared of it. One of them had to do with not having the correct belief in the hereafter. Another one had to do with this idea of just being like a good Muslim and remaining single and individual. The third point is that sometimes people are scared. Okay, why are they scared? Okay, they're scared because they've seen other people crash and burn when they get married. You know, I don't think it would be unreasonable to say that maybe 50% of the marriages, you know, I don't know exactly, but you know, maybe a little bit less, but let's say 50% of the marriage are failing, right? So when you see that, you're like, hey, that's a pretty big number. Let's say it's 40%. Let's say it's 30%. Still, it's a pretty big number, right? So then you're like, okay, well, if that's the way it works, then same thing for me. So therefore, I'd rather not, because all the things that will come out of it, all the difficulties, right? Now, brothers and sisters, this is where we have to really ask ourselves that, how important is family for me? Is it something which is just like an optional if I get around to it, right? Or is it something that I've been created for? Allah Ta'ala in the Quran says that وَمِنْ آيَاتِهِ سُورَةُ الرُّومِ وَمِنْ آيَاتِهِ أَنْ خَلَقَ لَكُمْ مِنْ أَنفُسِكُمْ أَزْوَاجًا لِتَسْكُنُوا إِلَيْهَا وَجَعَلَ بَيْنَكُمْ مَوَدَّةً وَرَحْمَةً. Allah doesn't just say that, okay, you know what, if you want to, you can get a spouse and you can have a family. Right? He doesn't even say that, okay, if you do that, then I'm going to help you. He says that you have been created in a way that you are meant to be paired up with someone else, and I am promising you that I'm going to make this be something which is filled with love and compassion and mercy and sukoon and tranquility. And by the way, it's something which is so beautiful that I'm going to count it as one of my signs. Meaning if somebody wants to see the handiwork of the Creator, the beauty and the precision and the justice of God in one of its most beautiful forms, they can look at the family. And how it is that these two individuals who are completely separate, they can come together and be one. And how from this they can come these children who walk the earth and they are saying, La ilaha illallah. Right? This is something which is really amazing if you look at it. Right? It's not something which I can be scared about going into. Now, one of the reasons why marriages fail, a lot of times it's things that could be preventable. One of the areas where we need to work on, brothers and sisters, is we need to work on making sure that we encourage our youth to go about getting married in the proper way. It's not the way that they show you in the media, where it's like, okay, this person befriended me, or I saw their profile, and then I start chatting with them, and then one thing leads to another, and then, okay, mom, dad, I'm ready to get married. That's not, you know, that's something else. Okay, marriage is a very serious process. It needs to be gone about in a very proper way, right? If you want to do something that's important, you do it in the proper way, right? You don't just do it in any way that you want to do it. The more important it is, the more important it is that you go about doing it the right ways. In a nutshell, this is not a marriage seminar, but because it's so important, I feel like I have to mention it. Those steps that must be done in order for the proper spouse to be found, you can't avoid doing these. Number one is that you have to approach it with the niyyah of istikhara. Okay, istikhara, sometimes, you know, we take the one meaning of it, which is when you're stuck and you don't know what to do, you want to seek, you know, you want to find out where Allah's will is, then you do a certain thing to find out. Istikhara in its general sense means talabul khair, meaning that you're seeking goodness. Okay, when you go about doing this, don't think that you're alone. Right? This is your destiny. You want Allah's help. So you start out by that. Number two is that you do some basic research. Figure out, you know, who this person is, other than how they look. Okay. Number three is that you discuss on and there's guidelines for what you discuss. You talk things out. You do that necessary research. And it's not a discussion of, like, you know, trying to, let's say, get to know each other on a personal level. It's trying to find out, okay, who is this person? What do they stand for? How do their values, how are they compatible with mine? Do we match? In terms of what I've set out for my guidelines, do they meet my must-haves and my nice-to-haves? The next thing is detailed background research. This is extremely important, that nobody should just go forward with it just because, you know, things seem to click. We talked to one person, and this person, you know, he told us that, oh, mashallah, excellent, 100%. No, that's not enough, right? You would do more research when you want to buy a car, right? Or you want to buy an iPhone, you do more research, right? So when it comes to a lifelong commitment, it's not about just talking to one person. Right? You do proper research. You go and talk to, find out how they were when they were young. The people who really know them, know their akhlaq, find out how they treat their family, right? Understand things, talk to people. And it's not ghiba, which is haram, right? This is another misconception that people have. And brother and sister, on top of that, sometimes there might be a case where we still don't know and we're not sure. In those cases, the ulama of akhlaq, they even recommend that, let's say that, okay, everything else seems good, it's all checking in, but we still haven't been able to find out that type of research which will give us that itminan. The ulama of akhlaq, they say that, okay, at this point, it might be a case where you need to engage in a temporary marriage to see, you know, and to get that itminan. Okay, oh, temporary marriage, oh my God, isn't that like something which is like really bad or haram or something like that? Brothers and sisters, no. These are the things where Allah has given us the way of being able to handle it, and we need to make use of them. And then finally, tawakkul. Okay, like, let's say I go through this process, I do my research, I don't approach it through emotions, I approach it through logic, I consult other people, we do the research, everything checks in, we talk, we discuss, and we find that, okay, there is that compatibility. Okay, everything's checking in. Is there a chance that I could be fooled and maybe there's something going on? Is there a chance that when I actually start living with this person that it won't work out? Yes, there is. Right? But this is where we do tawakkul. Tawakkul means that I've done my responsibility, Allah. Now I'm leaving it to you. You determine what's going to happen from this. Okay, this type of spirit can take away a lot of the fears that we have. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. I mentioned a few reasons for why you know, people maybe have a negative taste toward family and marriages. The last point that I want to make is a very important point. Is that, brothers and sisters, when the existing families are not families which are pleasing Allah, they are not organized on the principles of the way families should be organized according to the Ahlul Bayt, and our children see this, then what kind of attitude are they going to have towards marriage? Obviously, they would say that, you know, I saw what it was like with my mom and my dad, right? I don't want to go through that myself. So this is something which is a plea to the parents and a plea to the married couples, that let's work at this. Let's make it a priority in our lives. Oftentimes, when people come to family life, because they're so busy with other things, they take the approach of, like, okay, I'm going to do the least necessary in order to make it work, just make it functional. But in the past, it used to be the case that people would pride themselves on this idea that, you know what, we have a thriving household. We don't just do things in the least, we do things in an awesome way. We make it a priority to spend time together as a family. It's extremely important that we make it a priority to have good akhlaq. You know, when it comes to problems in the family, a lot of times people say that, okay, you know what, my spouse is like this and they're like that, they have all these problems. Yes, there are some cases where there's an abusive relationship and one of the parties is not at fault at all, and those need to be dealt with in a special way. But the reality is that almost every time where there's an ongoing conflict, the problem isn't with just one of the parties. The problem is with both of them. It might not be 50-50, but usually both of them are at fault. And if we go to the teachings of the Quran and the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam, they tell us that if both parties want to work things out, then Allah Ta'ala will help them and He'll give them the solution to it. And one of the main problems is one of the easiest ones to solve, which is the way that we deal with each other with our akhlaq. How much forgiveness do we have? How much patience do we display? Shaheed Mutahhari, Ridwanullahi Ta'ala alayhi, he says in one of his works that in the summertime we used to go to study Nahjul Balagha with one of our teachers. And we found that this teacher was an ocean of knowledge when he came to Nahjul Balagha. He had so much to offer us. And we saw that he was a person who, you know, is so familiar with the words of the Imam. He was acting upon them as well. And the way that he would treat us, the way that he would even treat his family, we saw that he was somebody who was very dignified, very noble. But then he says that one day, we went to class and we saw that our teacher was upset. Something was troubling him. And so we said to him that, Ustad, you know, what happened? Why are you like this? He says, I had a dream. And in this dream, I saw that my soul had been taken. And I was getting ready to enter the next world. And they had dug the grave for me. And my body was being taken to the grave. And my body was being lowered into the grave. And as it was being lowered, there was a dog that came to join me in the grave. And I was lying there, unable to do anything to defend myself, and this dog was preparing to attack me. And it was coming and going, and it was attacking and going back. And I thought to myself that this dog is going to be my company in the grave. And I didn't know what to do at that point, except for to turn to Abu Abdullah al-Husayn alayhi salam. So I did tawassul to him, and I saw that with the tawassul to the Imam alayhi salam, he came and he shooed the dog away. And then I woke up. So, you know, his students are asking him that, okay, so this dream, like, what do you take of it? What do you understand from it? So he says that this was a blessing because, you know, when you have these type of dreams before you die, definitely it's like a way of Allah Ta'ala telling you something that, okay, something needs to change. So he says that, what did you learn? He says that, you know, when I think about it, I feel that sometimes when it comes to the treatment of my family, I get angry when I shouldn't. And this dog was a representation of my unfair angerness towards my family. Brothers and sisters, it's a very serious thing, right? We have rights and responsibilities towards others. One of the most incredible ways of vaulting forward in our connection to Allah and soaring into higher levels of spirituality is when we're able to control our anger, when we're able to deal and respond to hostile and maybe negative attitudes and negative actions with kindness and love. At the same time, one of the ways that we can fall very far is when we show anger when we shouldn't, when we aren't able to control our tongues. So this is a plea to the brothers and sisters that we need to take this seriously. It's something which is very important. We need to take the responsibility extremely seriously. There are more points that I would like to, inshallah, I'd like to continue this discussion and talk about some of the other serious issues that we're facing that are threatening our families. Inshallah, if Allah gives us the tawfiq, then we'll continue the discussion tomorrow night. Tonight, as a segue into the masaib, I want to first send my salam to our Imam, sallallahu alayka ya Aba Abdullah. صلى الله عليك يا ابن رسول الله صلى الله عليك يا سيد الشهداء أيها العطشان بكربلاء Peace and blessings be upon you, O our Master, O the one who was slain on the banks of the Euphrates River while his mouth was thirsty. When we read the history of Karbala, we see that the one who was the support for all the women and children and the army, the one who was the pillar, was the flag bearer of Imam Hussein, Hadrat Abbas alayhi salam. But the one who was the delight of the heart of everyone was the son of Imam Hussein, Ali Akbar. According to one report, we're told, when the ladies and the children didn't want to see him go forward, they loved him so much, they knew what would meet him if he were to go forward. Imam Hussein alayhi salam tells them, leave him, leave him. He is one who is drowned in the love of Allah. Everything he does, his entire being exists for the sake of Allah. It is because of his connection with Allah that Ali Akbar was so beloved. For everyone else, we're told that Imam Hussein alayhi salam gave them permission to go forward. But only in one case do we see, when one of the soldiers went forward, the Imam had to say something. What is he saying to Allah? Oh Allah, be my witness. But perhaps Imam Hussein alayhi salam is asking Allah, oh Allah, give me patience. This is the very beloved of my heart who is going to be martyred. Oh Allah, give me patience. Ayatollah Behjad says that we're told in history that Ali Akbar martyred 200 of the soldiers. 200, this is not a small number. But when they came to him, when his body was on the ground, they didn't just kill him once, they killed him 200 times.